Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining this afternoon's program of Unfiltered. It is April 3rd, and I'm here with my co-host, Brian DeMarco. Say hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
We missed April Fool's Day, but I guess we can play it off on the 3rd, right?
Absolutely.
We have some jokes to play today.
Do you have any stories from the 1st? Nothing happened to me. I feel like April Fool's Day came and went without any sort of regard.
Well, my only joke was the one that my 29-day-old daughter played on me, and it was at 3 in the morning when it was my turn to change her, and I thought that she had, you know, this big, messy diaper. You know, I'm not really a diaper kind of guy, but then she, you know, she rewarded me with peeing all over my arm,
oh.
And I thought that was really exciting. It was really a nice April Fool's joke that she played on me. And
her diaper spanking clean, but it
was spanking clean,
oh.
and yeah, so that was a big April Fool's for me.
All right, yeah, okay. Well, I got nothing for you, so we're going to move into today's news. And just looking at what we're going to speak about today in terms of U.S. domestic wines being on the rise and sort of more value-driven wines, which has been the trend since the crash in 08. We look at the Italian sparkling wine renaissance as documented by Impact Data Bank, a publication of Wine Spectator, showing that from 2005 to 2010, the number of cases imported to the U.S. surged about 73%.
Was that any surprise to you, though?
73% is rather high. Yeah, I've always kind of looked at Prosecco, and our guest today also is from a wine bar that served Cava back in the day, and it seems like it's been on the rise for quite some time. So in the past 5 years, 73% seems a bit high, but I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, depending on the base it started with, any growth like that has to go with some notice. And the reality is that people have been looking for. People still want to drink, but they want to choose alternatives, especially in the sparkling category, that fit their everyday budget. You know, champagne has been relegated. You know, you and I drink champagne because we're in the business, but it's really, you know, almost 80% of their sales happen in the fourth quarter for holidays. And mm-hmm. Prosecco seems to have and Cava have a year-round presence and sell off the shelves every day. So I think that trend isn't going anywhere.
No, it sure isn't. And it seems also the U.S. is taking that on in looking at other areas that have the ability to produce sparkling wines, as is England. So it's going worldwide.
But do you think Prosecco is now seen as, obviously it's seen as an Italian import, but it's almost mainstream at this point?
Oh, it's definitely mainstream. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we are going to introduce our guest today, Stefan Malgavin.
Mel Vaginum.
Shoot, I had it so right before we started. Mel Vaginum.
For our listeners, that's Stefan M.
Yeah,
he's the M man over here. But welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And a little intro, Stefan M. Is also a Brooklyn dweller. Just started a wine bar about 8-9 months ago?
Yeah, almost a year.
Almost a year. Okay.
Well, June 1st will be our first year anniversary.
And what's the name of it?
It's called Custom American Wine Bar.
Nice. Where is it located?
It's at the corner of Driggs and Metropolitan in Williamsburg.
What's the subway stop for that for our...
Bedford,
for our Manhattan Driggs. Listeners. Come out to the
Driggs
to the
exit.
Berg.
Yep, real simple. Mm-hmm. 5 blocks from the Driggs exit.
Right on.
And the hours?
6 p.m. to 3 a.m., 7 days a week.
Nice.
Kitchen closes at 2.
Running late night for all those industry folk out in the UK, which is great. Yeah.
What's the preferred industry night for for freaks like us.
Well, we'll take you any night of
thank
the week,
you, sir.
Brian.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But we do see a lot of industry Sunday, Monday, as is usual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. And we sometimes do some fun things on those nights, as Aaron was party to a few weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's what kind of brought us together again. On the Brooklyn front was a tasting that Stefan was hosting at Custom in conjunction with John Falco, I believe his
Josh
name
Falco,
is. Josh Falco,
yeah, from Brooklyn Analogy.
Yep. So nice. It was all U.S. cheese and Brooklyn Analogy cheese and wine pairing. So very cool.
Yeah, we had a great turnout. A lot of people came, and
seat in the house.
yeah, it was packed. Yeah. And
what were some of the highlights of that night?
Well, I just think that for us, you know, we are in the industry. We know what's available here domestically and locally, but it's that eureka moment whenever you're dealing with a guest who suddenly, you know, realizes that, my God, there are so many great things just under our nose and available to us. And that was kind of the mission of what we, you know, what we've undertaken. So whenever that penny drops, we're very, very happy and appreciative.
So I guess that leads us into the obvious segue of, you know, your new place, and that, you know, one of the ideas, or I guess the founding principle, is that everything you carry is domestic.
Yeah. I you know, Erin actually knows quite a bit about Bar Carrera because she was involved in the conception of it, and I'm partners.
The first venue.
That's right.
For everyone, yeah, that was Stefan's Spanish wine bar.
Yeah, and my partner Frederick and I, we opened the second location down on House, and that was almost at the same time that the economy dropped. So, you know, great time to open something. But it all worked out because, you know, it's... The concept is very value-driven. But I kept feeling like we were just sending money overseas. And how could we do our own little stimulus package? And the idea was, you know, let's do everything local, do everything domestic, and showcase what we have in this country.
That's the idea and the concept spinning behind Custom. And after you... Open Bar Carrera, you had kind of manned that bar for what,
couple of years.
2 years or so before going on, and I thought it would be interesting to talk and speak a little bit about just customer perceptions from you know, Spanish offerings, food and wine related, and American offerings, and how that's changed or what you've picked up.
Well, I think most people do have this feeling that especially wines from Europe have some greater clout, some better profile than what we do domestically. But you know, the proof is in the tasting, and we first decided to prove it to ourselves. We did a massive tasting of everything that was available domestically, and we found things that were just as good. And so you do have that preconception when people come in, well, how good can American wine be? Or if it's good, it's only from California. But we've discovered that, you know, we were talking about sparkling wines from Arizona, and, you know, there's
New Mexico.
Just pretty much all 50 states actually do make wine, and quite a few of those states make good wine.
What do you think about Michigan wine?
Well, I haven't had a lot of it.
I've only had one, so I can't comment on
and,
it either.
It gets a lot of press.
It's good. The whites from the north are pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the funny thing is I feel it's almost like Virginia wine, and the lower-end wines are not that great, but the higher-end wines are pretty, you know, pretty interesting, and I wouldn't say remarkable, but I'd say pretty fair values for what they're offering, and pretty good for, you know, if you take the same Virginia wine for $20, I could still find a French wine that's better, but... Given the subset of Virginia wine at $20, there's some good ones.
Yes.
And I think that it's interesting, you know, we've come a long way from just growing Planck in upstate New York and California wine. In fact, you brought a wine today from Washington State. Why don't you, why don't we start cracking these open?
Maybe
we
All right.
You want to start with the white, though? But I'm still so interested in this.
Well, the white, I'll
you
tell
just
you.
Like the bottle. Stefan brought like a little stout bottle of quote-unquote port, Sirdal port from Washington, and yeah, it's pretty cool looking.
Yeah,
we have three wines. The first one we actually have poured and is in front of us. It's a 2009 Chardonnay from the South Fork of Long Island. The producer's Channing Daughters.
We know Channing Daughters. We're big fans.
Mm-hmm, yeah, un-oaked Chardonnay, great, salty. Kind of a little minerality to it, great with seafood, more just as an aperitif. It's just a great glass of wine. We pour this by the glass. Very affordable, $10 a glass. The red that we have is from Washington. The AVA is Columbia Valley, and it's from Substance Vineyards. Very interesting, and this is part of what I think American winemakers are taking the lead in doing, and that is taking grapes and blends that aren't normally accepted elsewhere and experimenting with them. Cunoise is a blending grape, I think one of the 13 that you might find in a Chateau Neuf de Pape. Almost rarely, if never, by itself.
Right. Yeah, I've never seen it.
Never.
Yeah. You know, I think you were a little skeptical when I poured
it.
Aaron, a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, it's a really great expression of that terroir. It's a nice, earthy, medium-bodied, spicy wine. Taste it, you know, it stands on its own.
I believe.
And it's great because it's a great example of our own winemaking doing something different.
When you think about the offerings you have at your new place, what comes to mind as far as consumer feedback or your customers are saying to you, not only about the concept but about the individual offerings? Like, what stands out? Like, the things that you're offering, what are people just flipping out over?
Well, one thing, just as a general observation, when people come in, they're really embracing what we do. In fact, some of them say, "I can't believe this hasn't been done before," and that is celebrating what we have in our backyard. And so we get overwhelming support for the concept, and I think a certain surprise that the quality is as good as it is, especially because, you know, we also have a food menu. We do domestic cheeses and meats, and, you know, the event that we did last week was a pairing of some of America's best cheeses, and you could not believe, you know, you'd put it side by side with any French or, you know, Spanish cheese, and it would definitely hold its own.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think that there's something about having our own terroir that is interesting to me. You know, when you go to Vermont and you taste, you know, wine from Crafton, and you're drinking, say, Dogtown. Dogfish from Delaware. You know, these guys are just, you know, they're uniquely doing things in their own backyard that have, like, you know, caught on and become almost like these, you know, cult things that are perceived as small, but they're actually larger than you'd think. So what kind of products do you think are on the next phase of the bubble?
Well, one thing that we've really committed to do is try to find as many local purveyors as possible. So the next phase 2.0 of custom is going to be finding those those vendors.
So local to New York or local to the East Coast? Or,
well, we start with the idea that we want to, you know, reduce our carbon footprint and stay as local as possible and radiate out. So Brooklyn Oenology is a great example. It's, you know, wine that's made very local. Red Hook Winery is another great example, which we're going to pursue as well. Local cheesemakers, and the, you know, Brooklyn itself is its own brand now, and there are all these small entrepreneurs that are making pickles and things that we're just starting to kind of get to know.
I think that we kind of touched upon that. I was actually leading into my next question with keeping in mind Brooklyn and whether or not, you know, you chose Brooklyn in order to do this based on the energy that was happening out here and this sort of commitment to supporting, you know, what grows next door, that was more centered around Brooklyn as opposed to opening in Manhattan, or did you just want to open in Brooklyn in general?
No, you're right. We actually had the thought that at first this would be something in Manhattan, and the more we thought about it, the more we realized the only home for something like this is Brooklyn. Brooklyn just has embraced what we're doing and the types of businesses that do the same thing. And I just think it's a great place to experiment.
Sure.
People are open to that type of experimentation.
Mm-hmm. And also the rent helps.
Yeah. We ran afoul a little bit of the community board, and it ended up taking us a year to open, but that's a whole other story.
Well, never can do it 100% right by anyone's...
No. You think you would have learned after your second, opening, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's all good now, and we're open and loving it.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a short break, so listeners, please stay tuned, and we'll be back for the second segment.
Public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune into The Food Scene Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, photo editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan magazines, he'll further explore the amalgamation of food and art by talking to artists from a multitude of media. Guests will range from photographers, food stylists, interior architects for restaurants, industrial designers, all the players that make you want to eat with your eyes. Get ready to feast your ears every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah. All right, I'll bring up some political thing that'll throw you.
Welcome back to At the Root of It. Previously known as At the Root of It, now we're unfiltered.
Wow.
Nice.
We're really unfiltered now.
Happy Jack, you can edit that at any point.
Solid editing.
We're here with Stefan from Custom American Wine
Stefan
Bar.
Stefan M.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
For the man. But anyway, hey, we were thinking about your location over there, and what night this week is there going to be a special going on? Like, you're going to do like a whole local pig sometime, or you're going to do something that's like a side of beef, and let's have a party over there, and we'll get our four listeners to show up.
Well, certainly you mentioned that you've heard this, and we're going to take good care of you. We are changing our menu up for spring very, very shortly. We just actually went through a tasting. The executive chef at the coffee shop, Raymond Mohan, he's a personal friend of mine, so he's been helping me with this. And
Union Square Coffee Shop?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. He and I did a project called Colors some years ago. Which I think you went to the opening.
I did go there, yeah.
We're changing. What we've done right now is we've sort of had a regional look at cuisine, and we have po' boys and Philly cheesesteaks and
American
Cobb
favorites,
salads.
Essentially.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm taking a little page from Bar Carrera and tapasizing everything,
nice.
Making things smaller.
Smaller portions.
Yeah, and then also we're introducing a slider menu.
Nice.
So we're going to have 9 sliders, and you can order like a flight of 3.
Sweet.
And we'll pair it with you. So we have everything from Sloppy Joe's to Po' Boys to, you know.
So let me ask you, I mean, in the cynic that we all are in the business, I feel like sliders, they're here, obviously, and they're here to stay.
Yeah.
Is that a Me Too project now, or is it like sliders now the new, you know, grilled cheese? You know what I mean? Or is it
I see what you're saying.
The new panini.
But it's also, you know, so much of it is just how you interpret it, you know? There's only so many different ways to, you know, to
reinvent the wheel. Yeah. Just what's good is good.
But and sliders are classically American.
Of course.
So I think we have some laid a claim, you know, to use it.
Absolutely.
As our food of choice.
I think it's without question that some beef sliders would go really well with this little wine that we're tasting right now, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a smokiness to it, but ripe fruit.
Yeah, this is the 2007 Substance Cunoise, and this is another wine that we have on our list.
Okay.
That we're very proud of, because it is, again, it's just such a unique varietal.
This is hailing from Washington State, which has that heat that can really ripen the Syrah. Exactly.
It's Columbia Valley, especially, is known for having that specific microclimate that does, warmer weather grapes flourish there.
Well, domestic Syrah has been on the rise, and I think that, you know, besides Santa Barbara and some other key areas, that you're going to see Syrah, you know, even though there's been a glut of it lately, there's going to definitely be, there's going to have a Merlot effect on Syrah. So you're going to see it becoming so commonplace that people sort of think of it as not so special anymore, but there's still going to be a place for high-end Syrah. And I think that Washington State's one of those places where, you know, it's not necessarily known for it right now. What do you think? Give me a tasting note, sir, on this wine right now.
This wine, this wine is you can see it's unfiltered, it's medium bodied, it has a really approachable nose, a little forest floral,
a little sensory for the radio there.
Yeah, spice. I'm getting a little raspberry as well.
Mm-hmm.
What does this go with? One of your sliders?
Yeah, this was the wine that I was pairing when we did the menu development.
Nice.
So it went with pretty much almost everything, because it has, you know, a good backbone. It's got that earthiness, I think, that really plays well.
Well, if I can make a suggestion for one of your sliders, and being local, Long Island was known for their pecan duck. For many centuries, they were the leading producer of duck in the United States. And so I think you should throw a duck slider on there. Well, a duck confit slider would be nice.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I think we should have one of those.
Brian's a chef, so
I will take that under advisement.
With a little cabbage, like a nap of cabbage on there. And why don't we make one of those tonight?
Where were you? we're going to have to get him in on the second round.
Yeah,
that's all right.
The season will change.
Absolutely.
Yes, next season.
So we are probably going to do some kind of a special event to kick off the new menu. So I will definitely
let
keep
us know.
You, yeah,
let
I'll,
us
know. I'll keep you.
We'll give you the shout out. We'll give you the shout
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and then you'll be the local celebrities there.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Can I sit in the corner and get drunk?
Of course you can.
Well, I'll be like any other night.
Oh, dear. Well, not to be forgotten, wine number three, the bottle that you love so much in this little stout. How many milliliters is this?
500?
Is it 375 or five?
This is a five. Five hundo. Yep. Cool label. Barnard Griffin Syrah.
From Columbia Valley.
Yeah, all right.
As well. This is a
whopping 8.5% by volume, so you can stick that in your little glass and be
after dinner fortified wine.
Cool. So what are you finding? Are you finding that people, general across the board in New York, it seems there's not much consumption of dessert wines by the glass. Are you guys pouring this by the glass, and does it move, and how long does it stay for?
We actually don't even have this on the list. It's something that we just pour for, guests
I see.
Freebies.
Wow. Local celebrities.
Right, okay.
Exactly.
The crew at Roberta's.
Yeah, it's just nice. Fun to, it's fun to discover stuff like this. Help yourself. Pour a little bit and tell me what you think. It's not, obviously it's very different from Porto, but I think that as far as a dessert wine goes, it's kind of hits all the right notes.
Any notes about this particular producer? Do they have any other well-known grapes in their lineup?
They have a pretty significant portfolio. I mean, we normally don't carry any big producer.
Uh-huh.
You know, we try to keep them small. This is on the larger side of small. They have pretty much about five or six different whites, five or six different reds. We carry their rosé.
Okay.
Which mm-hmm. is a Sangiovese.
Cool.
Which is a really another example of using a sort of a different grape for an application. And it's delicious. It's rosé season is coming, so we're getting excited.
Yeah, exciting.
If this rain ever stops.
What did you think of that, Brian?
I think it's really interesting. It's got a little bit of medicinal kick to it, but I think there's something some pure fruit to it, and it's
not cloyingly sweet. It's
good acidity.
Acidity, yeah. A little grip at the end.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think this would go well with like a tart, like a lemon tart or something, you know. That'd be really nice.
Yeah, and we have, you know, it's funny because, again, this is a country that has a lot of great sweet wines because of the climate.
Yeah.
You know, Pellegrini, if you guys know from the North.
Yeah, sure, sure.
They do some wonderful sweet wines. There is Elk Cove from Washington. There are a variety of different producers that do great things. And, of course, just... up in the Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
I was going to say upstate New York. I was going to wait to jump into that. And, you know, they're starting to do some rosés up there. They're catching fire. And, you know, they've been trying to push Riesling in upstate forever. But I think it's actually going to take hold. Do you have Rieslings from upstate?
Not on the current list, but we did when we first started. We try to rotate them around a little bit. Right now we have another Washington State Riesling, a Mercer Riesling, which is great. But there's so much in the way of Riesling to
I know to pick from.
Yeah, there.
You're from Canada, right?
I am.
Originally, yeah.
Yes.
Shh. Ah. Hey, you know, once you start, you said we start local and then we radiate out from there. You know, there's some great Canadian wines as
Niagara,
well.
Niagara Peninsula, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I carry a bunch of Niagara wines and the Barter House book, and we work with Conselman and Chateau de Charme.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, Paul Bosque is the first person to plant vinifera in the escarpment up on Niagara. So I always thought that global warming is nothing but good for them.
Yes, that's true. It just increases the footprint that you can plant on. So
And the way that the lake effect and the mountains mm-hmm. protect them. It could be snowing in Buffalo and you still have harvestable fruit in Canada, which is pretty bizarre.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But good for Canada, that's for sure.
That is good for Canada. Good for Canada.
And then with respect to the local community, like other businesses that you are surrounded by and collaborate with, such as Brooklyn Enology, for instance, have mm-hmm. you found that there's a good sort of unity there or developing camaraderie amongst other people who are trying to do the same thing?
Yes, there is. It's definitely a sort of a group of like-minded individuals mm-hmm. that are, you know, out to kind of do something a little innovative, a little different, put their own stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're meeting those people all the time.
Yeah.
Just, in fact, down the block from us on Metropolitan between Driggs and Roebling, there is it started out as a kind of a music studio, motorcycle storage facility, now live music venue and cool. bar restaurant.
Nice.
Mixed
nice.
Use space.
Yes.
Yes.
It's called
yes.
a shop.
Yes.
Very, very interesting spot. And those are the kind of business people that are really kind of pushing the envelope,
mm-hmm.
and doing some really interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, within Williamsburg, all of the new, it's interesting because when you're behind the bar, you run into people, you know, regulars all the time, and they tell you about things that are opening, and things are opening at the rate of like four or five a week.
No
you
way.
Know, between,
wow.
Between Williamsburg and Bushwick. It's incredible growth.
Only soon will you have more collaborations coming and some good stuff on the horizon, which is great. Yeah. And anything before we close out the show today that you know you're interested in letting listeners know you're going to be involved in? I mean, we got the menu launch and
I think there's a couple of different things that we're going to do, which we were testing over the last 8 months. One of them is the one that you were involved in, which is a cheese and wine pairing that'll probably happen semi-regularly. And then we're going to do a winemaker DJ series, which is going to be kind of fun, with sort of a little more irreverent approach to wine.
So there's been enough winemakers who've, are they going to be behind the decks, or who's
No. We'll have a DJ. And okay. We'll have, it's like a mashup.
Because I actually, when I went down to Chile and worked with a vineyard.
Are you volunteering?
I'm not per se a winemaker, but yeah, I could wear these headphones and get behind there, no problem. Yeah. But no, I would volunteer Happy Jack first and foremost, because he is a DJ and a good one at that. But there was a winemaker I worked with down in Chile who was an awesome DJ. So he got...
Yeah, these are late night events, and they're, you know, meet the winemaker, get sloshed, have fun, dance.
Cool. Kind of are you doing anything with Brooklyn Uncorked or not this year?
Not this year.
Okay.
No, but it's on the radar.
All right, nice. And then you have a Facebook page, I think, right?
Not yet. We do have Twitter.
Okay.
At Custom NYC.
All right.
Working on the Facebook.
And we and can people order for delivery?
No, they can't. Not yet. Might happen.
Okay, I'm just trying to find help people find your place.
Yeah, custom-newyork.com.
Excellent, sir. Excellent.
Cool.
Thank you so much, guys.
Well, thank you. These wines were really nice as well, and so thanks for joining and bringing them.
Yep, and I'll let you know about the new menu.
Thanks. Stefan M., everybody.
Stefan M., yeah. And thanks to our producer and engineer, Jack Ainsley. This is your... host Aaron signing off from Unfiltered, and
Brian DeMarco. Take care, folks. Talk to you next week.
The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network.